The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on October 1st, 1984 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 12, Verse 42 and 43.
Brahman kalantara kritam tatkalinam kotam bhavet yat kumare hari kritam jagupo gandake vika. Sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done at the present? Lord Sri Krishna performed this pastime of killing Aghasura during his Kaumara age. How then during his Pauganda age could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? Kaumara age is up to 5 and Pauganda age is 6 up. Text 42. Tat bruhi me mohayogin paramako tu halanguro nunang etad dharereva maya bhavati nanyata. Tat bruhi me mohayogin paramako tu holam paramko tu halanguro nunang etad dharereva maya bhavati nanyata. Translation. By His Divine Grace, Srila Avoycharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O greatest yogi, my spiritual master, kindly describe why this happened. I am very much curious to know about it. I think it was nothing but another illusion due to Krishna. Translation with repetition. O greatest yogi, my spiritual master, kindly describe, why this happened. I am very much curious, to know about it. I think that it was nothing, but another illusion, due to Krishna. Purport. Krishna has many potencies. Parasya shakti vividhaiva sruyate svaita svatara Upanishad 6-8. The description of Aghasura was disclosed after 1 year. Some act of Krishna's potency must have been involved. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit was very curious to know about this, and he requested Sukadeva Goswami to explain it. So, this is an example of an attentive disciple. Sukadeva Goswami, he just went on explaining. Aghasura almost killed the devotees. The cowherd boys are brought back to life. They're going back to their home. But they didn't tell their parents for 1 year. And when they told, they said that as if it just happened yesterday. So, he just said that. And they came back, and a year later they explained to their friends and parents. But Parikshit Maharaj is so sharp, he's listening so attentively. Immediately he picked up that there's some discrepancy, something unusual there. If a big thing happens today, I don't tell somebody a year later as if it had happened the day before. But and especially when it has to do with Krishna, then it means that there must be something mysterious, something wonderful by his own spiritual potencies which has taken place. Otherwise, why this curious situation? You see, normally When we speak in the Bhagavatam, there are many subtle points which come up, which if one doesn't have the proper broad understanding, it may even appear like a contradiction. And the very sharp disciples, you see, who are listening attentively, they may be able to pick up some of these curious situations, and they are supposed to ask questions, so that later if someone else asks, how is this possible, or what is this, then they will be able to answer effectively. So Parikshit Maharaj, he was very attentive, and whatever he heard, he tried to digest. Srila Prabhupada said that we should take in the knowledge just like eating, then we should digest it. If it doesn't digest, then we should bring it back up again by asking questions. And then when it's thoroughly understood, digested, then we can assimilate it, then we should give it to others. No one should leave a half-digested, just like you don't leave half-digested food in your stomach. You shouldn't leave a half-understood knowledge in your brain, because that can cause some confusion in the future. One should be very careful to try to understand whatever is being said, and then to clear it up. If there's any doubt or misgiving or misunderstanding or unclarity, then that should be cleared up through proper submissive inquiry. This also shows etiquette. O greatest yogi, my spiritual master. Before one speaks to the spiritual master, it is a regulative principle that one should glorify the spiritual master. One should offer praise to the spiritual master, not some kind of false praise, but praise which is real praise, which is valid praise. And then, after, one presents one's own point. Just as when we pray to the deity, first we offer our respects to the deity, then we praise the deity for his transcendental qualities. You see, just like Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu is worshipped by the acharyas, they first offer in a humble way their obeisances to Lord Chaitanya. They glorify Lord Chaitanya, then in the end they pray for his mercy. So Parikshit Maharaj, he is very perfect in everything that he does. It's a very good example. Krishna is going through these different ages. They add different flavors to the pastimes. Naturally, a small child is completely dependent on the parent. Then they get a little bigger, they start crawling around. Then when they get up to 5 years of age, up to that point, they are very, very innocent in one sense. I mean, maybe mischievous, but they're very much dependent upon the parents. But after five, when they say 5 to 10, they start becoming, you know, developing other certain different qualities, different type of activities. Their speech starts to become more articulate. Their so many different programs are there. Their play becomes more involved. So in this way, now Krishna is going into this Pauganda stage. So Pauganda, like this, there are so many different stages of Krishna's childhood. And the different pastimes are glorified by the devotees, especially the Komar, the very baby Komar and Pauganda stages are very much, they're very appreciated, they're very much appreciated by the parents, those in the parental humor, while the Kishora age or the youthful age, say around 16 or so, that is very appreciated, deeply appreciated by those in the Madhurya Rasa. For the friends, well, the cowherd boys, they probably like this Pauganda age very much, because that's the age where Krishna has so many different types of play. So in any case, Krishna's pastimes offer variety for everyone. And these different changes of form, they're not under the ordinary, they're not under any material law that he's changing. As we, in the material world, there's a growth and a change under the dictation of the material world. Here in the purport, We should always remember that Parasya Shaktir Vividaya Vasuyate, that the Lord has got many energies. These energies are all under His control. And through the agencies of these energies, He's changing His appearance and He's having the various pastimes. While the difference is that we are under the control of one of His energies, the material energy in this material world. And we can, when we surrender to Him, come under the shelter of the spiritual energy and be protected from this material energy. So, but one, we are always under one energy or another. We are never independent. We may have some minute independence. That means that within the purview of that energy's control, there may be some room for movement, some room for going a little this way or a little that way. But that is very limited. You see, Srila Prabhupada said that even a person in the material world, they have some slight independence to move up to the Satya Guna or move down to the Tama Guna. Within the three modes, there are some crossroads where they have a choice. But there's a very minuscule alternative which is offered because of the conditioning of the fallen souls. On the other hand, the liberated soul under the shelter of the spiritual energy actually is much more free. He is quite free to move and to do various types of service for Krishna. Being freed from the laws of karma, they're not under that strict limitation of the material energy. Still, there's not complete independence because the living entity has got limitations. We are minute particles of Krishna. Even in a liberated state, we are not at the same level as Krishna in terms of our potency and our ability to do things. But we are at an equal qualitative level. We can relate with Krishna, just as the parents and the cowherd boys, they're relating with Krishna. So many of them are individual living entities who have taken birth in Vrindavana, just to get this opportunity to serve Krishna. This is the spiritual perfection. When we finish in this life and we think of Krishna and we're perfectly Krishna conscious, then when we leave this body, we can go to that universe wherever Krishna is situated. And there we participate in his pastimes. And then from that material universe, we go back to home, back to Godhead. So Krishna is actually coming to redeem his devotees. Some of the associates are his own internal potencies. Some are individual jiva, individual souls. There's different types of energies. Basically, there's the external energy, there's the marginal energy, and the internal energy. Bahiranga shakti, tatashta shakti, and the Antaranga Shakti. The Tatastha Shakti is also known as Madhastha Shakti because it's in the middle. Actually, we are this Madhastha Shakti or the energy, marginal energy. That means that we are not different from the spiritual energy in our basic nature, but our quantity being minute, infinitesimal. We have a tendency to come under the sway of the external energy, which is this material world. So the material world, the living entities, and then the higher spiritual energy. The spiritual energy is never under the control of the material energy. Rather, the material energy is considered to be a shadow expansion of the spiritual energy. This was revealed in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. One point, Mother Durga, Parvati, she did tapasya, worshipping Lord Chaitanya in one of the islands of Navadvip, chanting his holy name, Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. just chanting and chanting until finally Lord Chaitanya appeared to her. You see, then at that time, she fell at Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet and begged him that, "You're giving your mercy to all the fallen souls. You're delivering everyone. And everyone, they're all chastising me, calling me by derogatory names, Maya, the witch." So many different criticisms are there. "And in this way, I'm not getting any association with your devotees. They won't associate with me. And also, I'm not getting your mercy. So in this way, I'm suffering like anything. So therefore, I'm begging you to please have your mercy upon me. Will you deliver the whole world and only I will be without Krishna Prema? Even my husband, Lord Shiva, is Krishna Prema, but not me." So then Lord Chaitanya benedicted her that here in Navadvip, you can realize that you're actually the partial expansion of Radharani. And therefore, here at Navadvip Dham, you can experience your relationship with Radharani, and you can experience that pure devotional mood which is emanating from Srimati Radharani. So in this way, then Parvati Devi took the dust of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet and put just in the part of her hair where the ladies put the kumkuma in her Srimanta. And from that day, that island in Navadvip has been known as Srimanta Dvipa, or the island where Mother Parvati has taken the dust of Lord Chaitanya and put on the crown of her head, her Srimanta. So, but normally it's a fact, the devotees, they're not very interested in Maya Devi. Of course she's working on behalf of Krishna, but she doesn't get to come before Krishna. She has to stay off on the side or on the back. And at best, when Krishna looks at his internal potency, the reflection of that glance manifests as Lord Shiva, and the reflection of that glance agitates the material world. And that material energy then starts to create, the whole creation is set in motion. So, actually Krishna has nothing to do directly in his Vishnu form with his external energy. But she's a faithful servant. And so Krishna expands, is a partial expansion as Lord Shiva. So it's a partial expansion of Vishnu. And through Lord Shiva, directly, Parvati gets some association. But directly, she got that benediction from Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip Dham. And she also got that benediction at other times in Krishna's past, and she got to appear in different forms. So, the Lord or His different energies, they're actually all under His control. If we think that Krishna is somehow under the control or He's bound by the same laws and restrictions as we are, that is considered to be very offensive. You see, He's always transcendental to all these energies. And if we therefore take shelter of Krishna, chant His holy name, remain connected with Him through service, through surrender, then we also become transcendental to His material energy and we get His direct spiritual shelter. There would be no meaning to bhakti yoga and to taking shelter of Krishna if Krishna Himself were subject to the control of the three modes of material nature. You see, the great sages like Lord Brahma, the Creator, and Narada Muni, and Vyasadeva, and Lord Chaitanya, and all of the Acharyas in the disciplic succession, and in other successions as well, they have all taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet through bhakti, through devotional service, and easily transcended the three modes of material nature. Even Shankaracharya admits that Narayana is above the three modes, is above the material nature. Narayana parovyaktat. So, because Krishna is above, because God is almighty, He's above, you see from that, using those nomenclatures, the whole material world, because Krishna is transcendental, therefore if we take shelter of Krishna, then we also are able to transcend this material nature, which is causing us so much trouble as long as we maintain our rebellious attitude. Once a devotee surrenders to Krishna, crosses over the threshold of Maya, the ocean of birth and death, the material energy with folded hands congratulates the devotee for his victory. So people say the material world is a game and so on. But what the real game is, what the real competition is to conquer the material energy. You can never conquer it. She is far more powerful than any living entity. The direct way you cannot conquer her. You see, just like trying to fight the tar baby, the proverbial here, this southern USA tar baby, you'll get more and more entangled. In fact, there's an Asian story just to show that the tar baby story actually comes from India. There's an Indian story where one prince, he was a very valiant prince and he would conquer and do so many things. He heard that there was a big demon who had a sticky beard, so much hair, long hair, which was all matted from beard, and that he was in the forest. But he didn't care. He was very brave and chivalrous. So he went in the forest, and then there he saw this demon. The demon had hair everywhere. It was just like spread all over the trees and the ground and everything, according to this proverb. This is not like a scriptural story or something. This is just like a folk tale. We don't know the exact origin. But this is a very popular folk tale of India. So then this prince, it's been used by the Buddhists actually to show something also in their teachings. So he took his spear and threw it in the at the demon, but it got tangled in his hair and it didn't stick. So then he took his sword and went and chopped, but that also got stuck. His whole hair was all sticky, matty, some substance. And then finally he hit the demon and he got stuck and hit again, and finally he was completely entangled and he couldn't get out. So the same kind of situation. If you try to directly fight the material nature, then you get defeated. But that prince also, he outsmarted that demon. Then he said that, listen, something that I'm very hard, if you eat me, you get indigestion. And so he made some deal and he got out somehow. So the thing is like that, the way we can escape Maya is we have to become very, very humble. We have to approach Maya, that Maya, you are so powerful, you're so great, I'm just the insignificant living entity. I just want to serve Krishna. I'm not qualified to enjoy. And by going deep into the ocean of Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's service, devotional service, it's like a deep fish going down the nets of Maya. They get all the little fish up on the top, jumping up like the fishermen. But if you just stay deep down on the bottom, no net, no line, no sinker, they can't go that far. You see, not in the ocean depths. You see. Not in the shallow pools you may get fishermen, but in the depths of the ocean, 5, 6, 7,000, 20,000, I think even in some places, 6 feet deep. 5 miles, I think it goes actually in some places, but don't quote me, I'm not exactly sure. So anyway, the point is that this ocean of Krishna Bhakti is practically unlimitedly deep. You go in that ocean, it is unlimitedly deep, then you are safe from Maya. But if you want to come up to the top, and if you're optimistic, that there's a hope to enjoy in the material world, then you'll get caught by Maya. We should be material pessimists. We should be spiritual optimists. We should be very optimistic, very hopeful to get Krishna's mercy by serving Him. And we should be complete pessimists that there's no hope to be happy in this material world. That this material world is a hopeless place of birth, death, old age, disease. That whatever happiness is here is flickering, it is insignificant, it is not our real happiness that we are hankering for. The optimism we should have is that the only real happiness is in Krishna consciousness, is in serving the Lord, is in spiritual love for Godhead, that this material world's happiness is not at all anything worth thinking about. It's simply a trap to get us more and more entangled. And if we can absorb ourselves in this way, in Krishna's devotional service, then Maya will admit her defeat, and she'll be very glad to offer her respects to you as you go back to the spiritual world, or as you enter into Krishna's eternal pastimes somewhere in this universe, or in any of the universes in the material world. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaur Bhaktivedanta. So today we're having a preaching program at LSU, Baton Rouge, and therefore we all have to go quickly. It's actually a little late.